The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Michael Savage, how you doing? I'm in favor of homosexual marriage. I think that the oil companies are making a fair price. It's a free market. I believe George Bush is a brilliant man. I think that China is our friend. I believe Saudi Arabia is our friend. Now, would you believe I believe any of that? Of course not. Not if you listen to the show. But when you start seeing that people who say the very same things and pose as conservatives are signing deals for $400 million, $200 million, you have to ask yourself a question. How could the golfer and the wall banger be so popular to warrant this kind of money, particularly when this kind of money is not around? I mean, it's not around. There's like a recession depression going on in the media. How is this happening? Now, if it was 400 million riyads or 200 million yuans, I could say, okay, I understand it. But something is not adding up with these announced deals. That's all I can say. It doesn't make sense to me. Not financially. It makes no sense financially. As talented as people may be and as big as the audiences may be in the top rungs of talk radio, I don't see the numbers working. And I don't understand how they can be making these reports unless there's some fudging going on or something's off. But we'll never know. The fact is, we'll never know. And as I said yesterday, yeah, maybe a rising sea raises all ships. But if you think I'm going to compromise my position to make myself friendlier to the gatekeepers, you're mistaken. I cannot do it. I'm too far in to come out. If you like beige, then pick beige. You like vanilla, pick vanilla. I'm not beige, I'm not vanilla. I'm not a standard cola drink, I'm an energy drink. And it's just that simple. And that's the way it's going to be. I can't change at this phase of my life, not for money, not for anything on earth. And so here I am. And tomorrow's the big day of the hot dogs and the sausages and the corn and the this and the that and the that. And that's it. So here we are. So I pick up the local paper. I had a rush in for the red thing yesterday. Remember I told you I had a red buttock yesterday? No, I'll follow it up, truthfully. So I woke up today and I called, and I wasn't going to call, but my housekeeper, she didn't look at it, but she said, you got to call a doctor. I said, no, no. I'm one of these guys who won't call a doctor for anything. I won't. All right, ring, ring. She's out of town. Well, look, describe it. Is it hot? Yeah. You got to come in. I don't want to come in. It's July 4th. I don't want to. You got to come in. I don't want to drive into the city. You got to come in. You got to see the doctor. Could be an infant. Boom, boom. Get there. Go upstairs. My normal dermatologist isn't in. So very nice guy who, how shall I put it to you this? I don't know how to put it. Let us say that he would be on the other side of the issue of the marriage issue that I am. Way on the other side, like the other side. Nicest guy in the world. He says to me, drop your pants and lay on your stomach and let me look at you. I said, excuse me? He says, that's the way it works. I'm the doctor. So anyway, he thinks it's cellulitis, some contact. What do I don't know. I didn't take anything. Here I am on the microphone. So I went over to the Chinese restaurant that I love to hate and hate to love. I had nice greasy lunch so I can complain about it during the entire meal. And I picked up the local San Francisco paper. And I'm going to tell you why I'm going to read the headlines. Because something's going on in America that politicians don't know about that I know about. Here is the headline of the San Francisco Not Chronicle. That's a defunct newspaper that will soon be out of business because it's losing $1 million a week. They got rid of the deadbeat editor, whatever he was. Even they couldn't take it. You know, there's only so long you can pay $1 million a week. I mean, even the interest starts to add up when I told you when you're a Hearst. You know, so they got rid of him. They're only losing $1 million a week now. But there's this other paper that was actually given away a few years ago. That's the only... And the Examiner says, here's the headline, on ICE, the city backtracks on policy dealing with illegal juvenile criminals, federal agents to be given control of prisoners from now on. Wow. 20 years later, they're going to let the Honduran crack dealers be handled by the federal agents? Wow. How? Then on the top, it says Battle of the Brides, Obama's wife more unpopular. But what does that mean? Well, now, what kind of subheadline is that? Obama's wife more unpopular, but what does that mean? The twisted sisters in the media business so know that Michelle Obama is hated that they put out a contest of who was more hated, not who was more liked. Like if they asked, who do you prefer for First Lady, Cindy McCain or Michelle Obama, it would have been 85 to 15. Because as you well know, America's a racist country, not because Michelle Obama is an America hater. It's that inherently anytime someone of a particular orientation doesn't get what they want, they scream the R word, and you know the newspapers say, yes, boss. And the plantation shifts into overdrive. The liberal plantation workers go into overdrive, carrying the water. So I'm looking now for the poll of the Cindy McCain here. Michelle twice as disliked as Cindy. You hear how they put it? I never saw anything like this. Everything's twisted. Poll comparing perceptions of candidates' wives shows Obama on the losing end. No, really. Michelle Obama is twice as disliked as Cindy McCain, the Associated Press reported after surveying 759 adults. Well, why would they ask who do you disapprove of more instead of who do you approve of more? Can you explain that to me? Because they thought maybe that would come out, they could somehow take some of the dislike from Michelle and pass it on to Cindy. What are you asking a question like that? That's absurd. Cindy McCain is a first-class woman who doesn't have a blemish on her reputation. She'd make a perfect first lady. Michelle Obama is like a nasty college teacher who, you know, just where her politics are at. Then we move on here. Battle of the Brides within Gavin Newsom. Safe haven ends for felonious juveniles. But if you know, the mayor, I got to say this. I think he's not a bad guy inside. I just think he's a politician and thinks that the way to get ahead is appealing to the illegal aliens. And he doesn't know how to deal with the issue in order to run for the governor. Now, the reason I'm talking about him is because it's the same thing on a national level with the Democrat Party. They're not in touch with reality, as are 85% of the Republican Party, people in the Republican Party. They don't know what to do with this 30 million illegal aliens. Of course, the answer is throw them out of the country so that we can have America back and get on with our voting and get rid of these corrupt politicians. Because as you well know, if you factor in an illegal crowd, they're always going to vote for someone who panders to illegality. So San Francisco, wanting to lead the world in illegal behavior, is going to issue an ID card for illegal aliens. It will provide municipal ID cards to illegal immigrants and others living in the city access to services. So not only is this city a sanctuary city, which was introduced in 1989, by the way, which instructs local law enforcement and city departments not to assist federal authorities in enforcement of federal immigration laws, which means de facto the mayor goes to jail. It means Board of Supervisors are arrested in handcuffs. It means Kamala Harris, DA, arrested in handcuffs, given the perp walk and her head stuck in a car like Chicago in the 1930s during the Capone era. It means enough is enough, take the criminals out and give the city back to the people. If you're violating federal law, why are they not in jail? Explain that to me. Explain it to me. Because Nancy Pelosi is federal law. Because the left-wing gang has taken over the federal government. Now, what sense does it make for a city to give ID cards to people who are here illegally? And to say, well, we're doing this in order to make sure that the illegal aliens have access to city services. Who is paying for the city services for the illegal aliens but the poor taxpayers? It will allow them to gain access to services such as city-offered medical care? Now, why is this permitted? It's a violation of federal law. Cities do not have a right to rewrite federal law any more than cities have a right to rewrite gun laws. Do you understand that? That when the Second Amendment was found to be a right of all American citizens who are legally here, not insane and not formally criminals, that was because that's the intent of the law. The Second Amendment was written by the Founding Fathers to protect the First Amendment, unlike what the liberals on drugs would like you to believe. The reason the Second Amendment was written to make sure that we, the people, can preserve our First Amendment. Do you get that? Do you understand that? That the only thing that will reign in a Fidel Castro or a Joseph Stalin or an Adolf Hitler is an armed people. Otherwise, what you think is bad now will be baby walk compared to what these monstrous, phony liberals from hell will do to you if they didn't fear you to a certain extent. You must make the government fear you, or you will become a slave to the government. Now, here's the question again. How could this be happening, that we see the city backtracking on a policy dealing with illegal juvenile criminals, allowing federal agents to be given control of prisoners, which, of course, they should have done for 20 years? We see a turning around. I actually see a slow conservative revolution that is ongoing in America from the street level up. You read another article. On campus, the 60s begin to fade as liberal professors retire. Thank God the degenerate drug addicts are leaving the universities. And it says that many of the new professors are different from their predecessors. They say less ideologically polarized and more politically moderate, which means they're conservative. There is a conservative revolution coming in America. I am in the avant-garde of this revolution. I probably will be dead before it makes its full head of steam. I hope I'm not, but I'm a realist. And I'm telling you right now, you're going to live, if you're younger than me, to see a reversal in this country unthought of. And the reason is because it's already happened. It has already happened amongst the people. It's just that the vermin in the media who control what you read, the verminous Marxist scum in the universities who control what your children are allowed to hear, the scum in the New York publishing business, the vermin in Hollywood who put out the mare that runs through the sewer pipes throughout the world, would like you to believe that the left wing is on the ascent. And so they invent a character like Obama and tell you he can win. And I'm telling you he can't win. I am telling you that the longer people look at this Alfred E. Newman, the more they're seeing that he's a fraud like every other politician, and he's a dangerous fraud on top of it all. And I'm telling you something else. Irrespective of whether they jury-rig Obama into the White House, or if McCain should, God forbid, drop dead on the campaign trail, which I hope doesn't happen, or McCain continues to commit Harry Caray by doing things like going to Colombia when we're collapsing here in so many ways, instead of going to the border. Instead of going to Colombia, he should have gone with the Minutemen to the border. That's where he should have gone, not Colombia. Talk about free trade. So unless McCain stops that, Obama. So what I'm saying to you is there's a slow conservative revolution going on in America. The left-wing politicians do not see this. And I will tell you that there's an example of why they can't see it. The left-wing politicians think that by appealing to the left, they're going to continue to rule the American landscape. It's not true. The cops, the sheriffs, the police are, in fact, acting out the will of the people. They're arresting illegals in increasing amounts. Cities are starting to crack down on the illegal aliens. This country is moving to the right, make no mistake about it. At the same time the people themselves are moving to the right, the politicians are continuing to move to the left. And I will tell you that those politicians are going to wind up moving right off the stage of politics altogether. They're going to be left out in the cold. That's what I see coming. Now, I have an analogy to tell you about. When I return in a minute, don't go to break yet. I know you guys can't tell. The reason the left-wing politicians can't understand this, I can do it now in 30 seconds, then take a long break, is this. There was an Arctic explorer. I don't remember this particular group. I don't think it was Rasmussen. I forget who this one was. He may have been an Antarctic explorer. But this was an Arctic explorer. And he reported in his journal that he was making headway toward the North Pole at a rate of, I think it was 3 miles a day. He had, you know, sled dogs. And by his compass, he was moving toward the North Pole, he thought, at a rate of 3 miles a day. What he didn't realize is he was on an ice floe that was going south at a rate of 5 miles a day. So he was actually moving south at a rate of 2 miles a day when he thought he was moving north at a rate of 3 miles a day. That's exactly where the left-wing politicians are going. They think they're moving toward the White House when, in fact, they're moving to the outhouse. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. What a great country it is. My grandfather was right. I never met him. He died trying to give me a better life. But he left the old country. He left the family behind. He slaved for 7 years, sent for them. What an American story. And I was the first one born man-child in the promised land, and here I am. What a long road this has been. What a long, rocky road. Glass thrown in my way, fire thrown in my way, hatred thrown in my way, prejudice thrown in my way. And here I am. I'll tell you the truth. It's an amazing story, and it's only in America. I don't mean I'm like a, you know, the greatest guy on earth, but believe me, what I've achieved in my life is phenomenal. And it's because the opportunity was here. Now, did anyone give it to me? Oh, no. They didn't give it to me. They denied it to me. I have found that every step of the way in my entire life, I've had to fight for everything down to the last second, like a cage fight. I'm telling you point blank. I don't care what it was, whether it was getting my PhD from Berkeley. It was like a cage fight down to the last day. I was drained and exhausted. It was not given to me because I'm a white guy, as many minorities like to bellyache. Oh, yeah, yeah, an old boy network, yeah. Don't tell that to me. I had to fight for this, and it was tough. Radio, every impediment known to mankind was thrown in my way when I started at a local station. The jealousy, the hatred, the liberalism, you name it. It wasn't just liberalism. It was a plain out human jealousy of anybody who comes along who's new, number one, and anyone who's talented, number two. Believe me, everything imaginable, from technical problems to other things. And so it's an amazing country. If you have perseverance, you can get there. Maybe, you know, maybe. Some have died. A lot of people just give up. And a lot of guys gave up that I knew at 30. Their lives were lost by 30. They weren't necessarily unintelligent, and they weren't bad people. They just didn't have that extra something in them called fight. And I don't know what it is, but I will tell you that when I was a young kid and I would watch fights, my father would say to me, "Who's going to win?" I said, "I don't know." And he would say to me, "The hungrier one is going to win. The guy who's more hungry." I didn't quite get it. And you have to have an inner hunger for whatever it is you're in. And it may not be money, my friend, because money ain't it.
Savage.
Savage Nation, you're listening to the U.S. Marine Corps band hymn. And you know, even if you're not military or were never military, or it doesn't matter. These songs are part of the American landscape, the mental landscape of anybody over the age of a certain age. Can't hear it already back then. The whole thing. I have an idea. You know, I am so tired of this endless presidential cycle. I've hated it. I never saw anything like it in my life that I want it over with. So I have a proposal to make, which is that tomorrow on July 4th on the White House lawn, Obama and McCain face off in a hot dog eating contest. And whoever can eat more hot dogs becomes the president the very next day. And the rest of us can just get on with our life. And that's the end of it. And all the money that is saved on advertising, promotion, pollsters, Rasmussen, Harasmussen, Zogby, all that money can be sent to the starving children of the world and for treating blindness wherever blindness exists. Would that work for you? Don't call. Of course it's not going to happen. I just want to do something lighthearted here already. You see what's on my website? A naked politician. A guy, I'm not making this up, out of Cincinnati. Naked prosecutor wants job back. Only in America. The prosecutor was fired after surveillance video caught him walking around the city government building naked. He claims his medication was off. Now, this is a prosecutor who sent people to prison. The guys walk, they have him on video right on my website, michaelsavage.com, walking naked. You don't want to look at the guy. He's disgusting, says a blackout. But here's the story in America, is that a guy like this wants his job back. Now, what kind of prosecution will be valid with a naked prosecutor who got his job back? Do you understand the death of the West? Do you understand why Otto Spengler was a genius? Do you know who Otto Spengler was? Do you know he wasn't the man who created an ice cream? Do you know it's not about a grotto in Berkeley? Otto Spengler was a brilliant theoretician, philosopher, early 1900s, pre-World War I, and a rather obscure one. And he wrote a book called The Death of the West, where he predicted that the Soviets and the Chinese would rise and take over the world, and that the West would eventually die. Little did he know about our dear friends in the Middle East. He was close but no cigar, but it isn't over yet. I actually think that the Chinese are waiting in the wings for the radical Islamists to knock us out of the box. Then they'll come in and eat them for breakfast. That's what I see happening in the long run. But at that point, I won't care anymore. It'll be your problem. Gee, I hope my mother's in heaven cooking for God. I have this fantasy. And I've decided it doesn't matter if it's a fantasy. You see, it doesn't matter. There's another fantasy, which is that God doesn't exist and that there's no afterlife. That's your fantasy. You're entitled to it. But you think about this. What if there are two fantasy possibilities? There is no God. There is no heaven. You live with that one. Then I have another fantasy. There is a God. There is heaven. I'm rewarded. My mother's there cooking for God. And when I get there, a meal is waiting for me. So you live with your fantasy. I'll live with mine. Okay? And when you breathe your last breath, don't get back to me because I'm not interested. Because you'll go where all people who don't believe in heaven go, which is the other place. I have to tell you something. At the base of it all, I'm a mystic. I never kind of got into this with you. But I truly believe all of this is an imaginary experience. I don't know why. Maybe it's the medication I'm on today, which is nothing. I went to the doctor, but I haven't taken anything yet. I actually believe that all of this is a projection of our consciousness, that we can almost create our own reality. I don't mean we can project it upon the world necessarily, although with very strong-willed people can. They create products and create a company. That's taking an idea. Let me show you the power of an idea. You're unmarried. You get married. You dream of getting married. You find the right woman or the right man and you get married. So, it starts with an idea, correct? You didn't go to college. You dream of going to college and becoming an engineer. You work very hard and you become an engineer and you get that degree. And then you're working in engineering. That's a projection of your reality. You dreamed of being an engineer. You become an engineer. Now you're living out your dream. Therefore, it is all a dream. I'm going to just do this for a few minutes now. The Islamists, on the other hand, dream of conquering the world and turning it into an Islamic world. They dream that by violence and by continuous warfare against the West, they can achieve the dream of an Islamic world where there are no dogs and where there are no infidels and there are only little bearded throwbacks from hell who tell the world what to do. That's Al-Qaeda's Plan B. Read it on the top of michaelsavage.com if you think I'm making it up. It was written by a brilliant Muslim writer, not by Michael Savage. It's a new book about the subject of a strategy by the despicable throwbacks in our midst who have a vision. And their vision is all negative, and it's a vision of hell. And they want to bring hell to the world in order to institute a hellish life for women in particular, incidentally. So let's go to the positive now. You can project to some extent, if you're strong-willed or you focus your energies, you can literally create your own reality. Young man working, hates his job, doesn't like it, takes another job. Doesn't like the job, dreams of being rich, wants a Ferrari, wants an airplane, wants to be famous. He creates a product. Now, what's he going to do with the product? Well, he has to invest money. So he saves his money. He invests his money in the product, and he becomes a $100 million, $200 million person or a billionaire. How'd he do it? In his mind, starts in the mind. Now, I told you the story about Louis, the monkey. Those of you, see, I have to catch you up to speed in the classroom here. I can't go back to every story. Remember I told you about Louis and the monkey and how Louis was an alcoholic on the Bowery and my dad brought him home. So Louis, he was an alcoholic in the old sense. He wasn't a dysfunctional bum. I mean, he worked odd jobs, and when he drank at night, he drank to drink. He drank to get drunk. He wasn't the social drinker. He spent every nickel to get drunk at night and fall down in the street. But he got up in the morning and went to work at a menial job. It was his lifestyle. He didn't get any welfare. So I got to know Louis because somehow, like when he worked for my father in the basement doing, you know, blah, 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 so we got to talk. So then eventually, years later, my father invites him out to the house on some Thanksgiving. He felt bad for him. And I like Louis. So we eat dinner. We sit at the dinner table. And Louis was very smart underneath that greasy long hair and that thin, bimmy look that alcoholics often had in those days before rich kids from the suburbs came around with too many turkey sandwiches. They preferred booze to turkey sandwiches, you see, It's probably healthier for them, too. So Louis starts to teach me tricks. Louis takes a nail. He says, get me a big nail. He said, listen, kid, I'm going to teach you how to bend a nail. I said, Louis, come on. I'm a skinny kid. I'm 11 years old. I'm not that strong. He says, come here. Let me show you. Look at my hands. He says, they're not big, are they? No. He said, now watch me bend the nail. And he said, you see, kid, you do it this way. He said, you put your thumbs in the center of the nail. Yeah. Ah, come on, Louis. My hands are... Louis, he says to me, Michael, put your hands in the middle, the fingers of your thumbs. Put your thumbs together in the middle of the nail and put your fingers on the outside of that nail. Now what, Louis? He said, now press as hard as you can and concentrate your mind on the center of that nail. And don't stop for even a millisecond, he said. I said, Louis, he said, shut up and do it. I press and press, and lo and behold, the nail bends like rubber. I said, what? How did you? Louis, I said, I'm not. He said, listen to me. You don't even understand what strength you have inside you. He said, it's all in your mind, Michael. I said, okay, but Louis, come on, explain to me how I did that. He said, how you did it? He said, by applying enough pressure on a single point of the nail for long enough, you're creating heat inside the nail. And by creating heat inside the nail, you're making the molecules move. And by making the molecules move, eventually they'll move and they'll become pliant and the nail will bend. Now, that was the alcoholic. So Louis taught me mind over matter. And truthfully in my life, I found out that no matter what impediments are put in your way, you can overcome them. You can. You ask people, they'll tell you the truth. I told you about the blind man I met on an airplane. Did I tell you that story? I can go on and on. I don't know why I'm bothering telling you stories today. They're not worth $300 million, $400 million. What I should be telling you is, why that Bush, believe me, he has a secret plan. Why it's the free market. And you got to believe those oil companies are working the best for you. That's right. And cigars are good for your throat and your T-zone. You suck those cigars. They're guaranteed to be good for your entire throat area. It's the T-zone, and that cigar is good for your throat. That's right. And that Bush, believe me, is working hard, day and night, just for the American people. Don't believe those liberal detractors. That's right. So where was I when I got so rudely distracted? I forgot already. I don't know where I was. I know, right? I'm just playing. It's a play act already. It's Friday when? Tomorrow already? Oh, God, a long weekend. Good God, three horrendous days with nothing to do but a barbecue. I'll go crazy by Monday till I'm back. You know that the world is an empty place? Do you have any idea that a painter doesn't stop painting on the weekend? Did you know that Rodin did not stop sculpting on the French national holiday? Did you understand that Cézanne didn't stop painting at 5 o'clock on Friday? Do you understand this? That Hemingway didn't stop writing because it was the weekend? Do you understand what art is? Do you have any idea what talk radio really is? It's a matter of projecting your mind through electron. Listen to this. Listen to what I'm saying to you. I am not before you on a screen. I am not wearing lipstick and rouge and crossing my legs. I am not wearing a tie that you can look at. I am not wearing an outfit you can look at. There is no glittery stage set that can distract you. There's no subtext running underneath me. There's no guest. And yet you're captivated by what I'm saying to you. How is this possible? How do I do this for 15 years, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, by and large? Because I have a will. I have an iron will. I have an iron will that will be broken one day by God himself. God will break the nut, and the soul will leave the nut and go to heaven. When God wants the nut broken, he'll break the nut, and that's the end of the story. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend. Where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson.
Gene Autry. Who doesn't know Gene Autry?
How
about giving a citizenship test? And if you don't know who this is, you get thrown out of the country. This is the defining moment.
My old 44.
If you can't translate this, you get thrown out of the nation. That's all. You don't know who Gene Autry is? Take a walk. We'll provide you a one-way ticket.
Well, Mike, it's a new multicultural America. You have to be more accepting.
I grew up on Gene Autry. How could an immigrant son be given it? Because they wanted to Americanize me. They got me. Shut up. Get him off already. I can't talk over this. Why did an immigrant family get me a Gene Autry record with a Victrola, hand-wound Victrola? That's how far back we're talking. Amazing. I can, to this minute, it's remembrances of turntables past. I can smell the felt on the turntable as I tell you the story. Large 78 record, thick. Like if you threw it out of the tenement window and hit somebody, they're dead. We're not talking CD. We're talking wax record. Must be worth a bit of money today. And I listen to this till you're back in a saddle again, over and over and over again, 3, 4, 5 years old, turning the turn. You wound it up till it got like the spring tension and let it go. And I love this song, and I insisted on getting a cowboy hat. Dad had to get me the cowboy hat. He got me the wrong color. I never would want to wear it. I was depressed. And he didn't get me the white hat. He got me the black hat. That set the course of my entire life on the wrong course. Had he only gotten me the white hat my entire But Gene Autry, I loved it. When you think about it, you think of the lyrics. I was stuck in this little tenement in the Bronx. Play it again, the lyrics. I want you. Is this where the buffalo?
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend. Where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum wheat. Back in the saddle again.
Which was right there. Yeah, the gypsum wheat. They feed on the Jimson weed. Okay, the politicians feed on the Jimson weed here in San Francisco. That's number one. I wake up. It's like Rip Van Savage. I wake up and from the back in the saddle again. It's Brokeback Mountain. Now they tell me every cowboy secretly they're doing it in the hay with the other cowboy. That's what I'm supposed to believe from the sewer pipe of Hollywood. The sewer pipe of Hollywood has taken every American thing that was beautiful and debased it and demoralized it to the point where I'd like to string panel wire over overpasses. I can't take it. You don't know what they've done to me. You don't know how I hate them. I don't viscerally dislike them. No, I hate them. I hate them. You know what hate is? There's hate for you. What they have done to this country, Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, you name it, all the way down the line, Mickey Mantle, these degenerate anti-American filth, what they've done to America, the damage they have done is far worse than organized crime has done from the day of its inception. Organized crime is not done to this nation what the vermin of Hollywood have done to this country. And not far behind are the people in the newspaper business. They're not too far behind. There are no's behind them. You hear me? And all I can say to you is, there is a counterpoint coming. Nature abhors a vacuum and everything changes. And I am telling you that we already are in the counterstroke. We are on the other side of a slow conservative revolution. The old, degenerate, pot-smoking crowd from the universities are dying off and retiring. And the next generation are not as all oriented towards hating America and deconstructing everything beautiful about this country. Moreover, I see it in other ways. I see it in cage fighting replacing boxing. I could see 100 cultural symbols of where this country is going. I could see it in sheriffs and police doing what the federal government refuses to do with illegal aliens. I could see it in so many ways. I can see it in the distemper the people have for McCain and Obama. I could see it in so many ways. I could see that we're already in it. Do you understand that? So have hope. The only question is there time enough left to save the country before this gang gets through with it? Before there's nothing left for us to inherit, for your children to inherit? You know, my father told me that the Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth. And he used to say, you know what the meek shall inherit? He said, take a look at what the dog left in the street. Well, he was from Russia, so he had a very severe outlook on life. He came from a terrible country where there were no human rights. And so, and he had a very tough life and died young. But the point I'm making is, he didn't have a Mickey Mouse view of the world. We'd walk down the street and he'd say, he was trying to teach me in his own way, but kids can only take in so much. And he did it in his own way. He was afraid for what was coming, you know. I remember he said to me, yeah, the meek shall inherit. You know what? He said, take a look at what the dog just did in the street. That's what they shall inherit. And I would say, Dad, why do you say that? What about nice people? He says, hey, there are no such things as real nice people. They're all using it to get over on somebody. That's how he looked at it. They use it as a power trip on people. The ultra nice. It doesn't mean you have to be an SOB every minute of your life. Okay, I didn't say that. You don't have to push people off. But I have found in my life that the person who's basically straight up gruff, and not mean, but straight up gruff, looks you in the eye, is usually someone you can trust more than the overly nice, saccharine, smiling, you know, kind of personality. That's just something I found. San Francisco, the Bay Area, I found out when I moved out of here. Everyone smiled in California when I came here. Oh, they'd smile at you, but the left hand was behind the back with a knife in their hand. They were looking to rip you off one way or the other. That's the California lifestyle. Everyone's cool with the Nehru shirts at the time. Everyone was cool and hip and this and that. And they're either looking to rip off your dope or your old lady or whatever. They could steal from you. And 99% of them became politicians or lawyers or both. Play Gene Autry for a minute. We're back where a friend is a friend. Maybe I should move to Brokeback Mountain. Maybe that's where the friends are a friend.
My old 44.
There you go.
Where you sleep out every night and the only law is right.
I'm sorry. Now, Leslie Fielder will tell us it was a gay song. And look, stop it. No, they'll reinterpret the whole thing. It was really a call to gayness, that Gene Autry was trying to be the herald of the new gay movement in America. And that the whole thing with Roy Rogers and Trigger, on the other hand, was also a certain kind of erotic worship of the stallion, which represents, you know, I mean, you have no idea what your children are being taught in school. There's some wacko that interprets Billy Budd, Melville's great novel, as a homoerotic novel. That Billy Budd really wasn't an idealist. He was gay, and they persecuted him because he was gay on a ship. This is what they put in your child's head, that everything going back to Jesus was a gay story, a gay allegory. You hear this? This is what passes for university teaching today. The Weimar Republic after World War I in Germany that led to Hitler was a moderate fairy tale compared to the filth of the United States of America today. The filth that the sickness of Hollywood produces for your daily affair. The filth that's on your television set at night would make the people in Weimar, Germany, blush with what the vermin of Hollywood from Brooklyn produce. The Brooklyn vermin.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Theme song of the Savage Nation, the Jeanette McDonald version. Very campy. All right, enough, Freddie. It's enough. Thank you. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I could play the jingoistic music. I'm a little under the weather right now. I don't want to hear. You want a jingo? Give him some jingo. Give us some jingoism for a minute. Then I'll go back to the regular show here. Wait, Pride of the Wolverines by John Philip Sousa. I want to hear. An immigrant from Portugal. Look what he gave the country. Great music. He didn't put a bullet in the father's head. He didn't have to become a drug dealer to survive. He didn't need welfare. He wrote music. That was a different generation. All right, turn it off already. Larry Harmon, longtime Bozo the Clown, dead at 83. Los Angeles just now. Larry Harmon had turned the character of Bozo the Clown into show business staple of delighted children more than half a century. He died Thursday in congestive heart failure. He was 83. Well, he probably realized he had no reason to live anymore because his act could be seen every night on CNN. What was the point of living? They stole the act out from us. My Wolf Blitzer is, besides his wife, Harmon, survived by his son, Jeff Harmon, and daughters, Lori Harmon and Marcy Breath, and Leslie Breath. All right, whatever. Bozo the Clown, it was a life. Did something bad about him? He did something wrong? Didn't do anything wrong. Look up now. Bozo the Clown was really. I don't want to hear it, please. I don't want to read tomorrow on TMZ that Bozo the Clown once exposed himself. Please, I don't want to hear it. It could be reported today by that Bozo the Clown once was arrested in 1939 for blah, 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 blah. Although children loved him, really, there was a darkness and sinister. He always suffered manic depression. Every personality, I have to tell you a story that's true, not true. Who wants to hear it? Bipolar. Bipolar. Where'd they come up with bipolar? When I was a kid in elementary school, I was bored out of my mind because my mind was too fast for what they were teaching me. I learned what a peninsula was in the first grade. And by the eighth grade, they were still teaching me what the peninsula was. I knew what a peninsula was in the first grade. Can we move on now? I didn't know what to do. I pulled hair out of my arm. So my mother went and got me cufflinks. She gave me like white cuffs and a little jacket. I don't know how she did. I guess she had dreams of me like being formal or something. And the cufflinks were of thespian nature. There was a happy face on one cuff and a sad face on the other cufflink. You know, the happy face, sad, the thespian faces, the clown, you know? And I'd sit for hours in the classroom. I didn't hear a word the teacher was saying. I would look at the cufflink on my right hand, happy. Then I'd look at the cufflink on my left hand, sad. Then when I really get depressed and agitated, rather, I'd move the cufflink to take them off. It took a long time, actually, with a double cufflink set of French cuffs, to take a cufflink off one without soiling the cuff and move it to the other. It was a good 12 minutes. And that got me through many, many hours in school. What do you mean bipolar? Who came up with this designation of the human condition? You go back to literature. All of literature is about the bipolar nature of mankind. But the pharmaceutical industry in cahoots with the medical industry came up with the idea that if they could make everything human into something medical, they could treat it and sell you a drug or a treatment. And then the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies would thrive. That's what it is. So today we're talking about different things before July 4th, a number of things. We're talking about these statements about Rush signs a $400 million deal. Wall Banger's about to sign a $200 million deal. I mean, it's crazy. The numbers don't add up, particularly with companies that, frankly, are somewhat struggling. Hello? I mean, you look at the stock of one of those companies, $1.02 today. Last year it was $12. Where are they getting $200 million from? I don't understand this. Can somebody explain this to me? John in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, it's all PR. The more they say they make, the more everybody makes, because now everyone's going to go listen to them and weren't listening to them.
What do you mean? By saying the salaries are so high, people think they're geniuses?
Yeah, they're inflated salaries. I don't think they really make that much. Wayne Newton, they used to say, makes $15 million a year, and they used to see his wife at the front gate counting heads because he probably had a door deal. You know what I mean?
Yes, okay. Well, no, there's no question that some of it is draw and some of it's based upon projected revenue, which is probably fantasy land.
Yeah, the projected revenue is fantasy land, like with the balloon folding guy. There's no way he could be making that money because no one even has that type of radio.
Well, how can they give money? Let's go back to the balloon man, the human cesspool on one of these satellite channels. The human cesspool with long legs and a small... The human cesspool allegedly makes $80 million a year. Now, how can they pay him that when the company is losing $150 million last year? Explain that to me. Where is the economics of this? Who is doing it? You want me to tell you how it works? Let me explain how it works. The balloon man's agent was in on the deal. The balloon man's agent was involved with the manager of one of the satellite companies in this kind of stock switch. So they all took money out of the stockholders, in my opinion.
I agree with you.
You know, you talk about FCC investigations. I don't think if they brought back the entire National Guard from Iraq and deputized them as FCC and SEC, rather, agents, they couldn't get to the bottom of corporate fraud in this country.
I agree with you.
It was all of this stuff. A lot of it is based upon tricking stockholders. So what are you going to do about it? I can't do anything about it. Thank you for the call. So I'm a little cynical about this. Don't get me wrong. I make a very good living in radio, but I know what numbers really are, and I know what numbers are fake. And I don't believe these numbers are real, frankly. Sacramento, Annie, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I really think that they're just buying them off to people that say what they want to hear. They let them keep on saying it, and they pay them probably as much as they can afford to. The people that say what they don't like, they do everything financially that they can to get them off the air.
Well, I've told you, I've paid the price. I have the third largest show in America, but I am not loved by the gatekeepers in the in certain aspects of the business who cater to certain particular lobbies. I don't have to spell them out for you. It would be every pressure group you've ever met and more. And consequently, I have paid for my opinions. But, you know, Annie, to tell me to become Salieri when I'm Mozart is impossible, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I do. I do. I love your show, and I have a lot of sympathy for what you're going through, and I think it's probably going to get worse with what you're dealing with care and everything like that. It's a shame.
Oh, it's going to get much worse. It's going to get worse till it gets much better, Annie. The judge, would you believe it, has still not put out a ruling now for 4 months, 3 to 4 months. She's hanging the case up in one of these federal courts. You know what I'm saying? Now, why would she hang this case up so long? What is she waiting for?
She's waiting for you to die, hopefully, probably.
Oh, thank you. Well, let's let that one go because there's something I could say that isn't necessarily wise to say. You know, the problem with being in talk radio is you start reacting. You have to react quickly on the radio, right? Or wrong? Of course. Otherwise, why be on the radio if you missed the, like, taciturn and you think too long? So you have to immediately react. Sometimes your reactions are good. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're not great. But when you get off the air and you're still doing it wherever you go, it becomes a jumpy world. And that's why talk show hosts tend to be rather reclusive after work, if they're really fast on the draw. Because if you do it outside, it's not a world that you want to be in doing this all the time. You need, like, a lot of people between you and the outside world. I, in the outside world, don't talk very much unless I'm around very close friends or people, because it's not safe to do so unless you know the people very well. You got to be very careful what you say. What I love about radio is that I'm anonymous when I walk the streets of San Francisco. 99% of people don't know who I am. The minute I say a word, heads turn. Oh, people from Akron, Michael, Milwaukee, Tampa, New York. Are you Michael Savage? I said, yeah, how'd you know? They said, well, it was your dog. I recognized Teddy. Oh, by the way, it's just been announced, by the way, in the New York Times that Teddy Savage has been given a $200 million a year deal to syndicate a dog show where all he'll do is bark. That's right. Teddy could probably have a big show right now. I had to go to that dermatologist. I said, what is it? Did the dog do it to me? Was it a tick? Remember a guy yesterday said tick? No. He said, there's no portal of entry. I said, please now, this is a mixed audience. He said, no, there's no sign of a bite anywhere. He said, it's cellular. I don't know what the heck he was. He didn't know what it was. Nice guy, but I could see already 19 seconds into the differential. And he was a very smart guy from a great medical school. But since I come from a cynical background, we got down to brass tacks. He didn't know what it was. It went back. No, some things you don't know what it is. I think it was nerves. Well, who knows what? Oh, I care. It's nothing. I saw a story the other night on Wounded Warriors. I couldn't believe what I was watching. The things that are done to these boys in Iraq by the practitioners of the religion of peace, I couldn't believe this. One guy, a big strapping guy, got a knife in the head from a nice Iraqi that he stopped at a checkpoint. And they bring him on a stretcher, the soldier, the Marine, into a room with the knife, the steak knife, sticking out of his head. And they show how they have to. Another one had a rocket-propelled grenade shot into his pelvis abdomen. And they wheel him in. And this was, I actually, tears came to my eyes because the surgeon was a Korean-American major, really intelligent-looking guy. And he said he cleared the operating room because he didn't know if the thing would go off and kill everybody. And they wanted him out of there because they said they didn't want to lose a surgeon. Listen to what I'm saying to you. A soldier it was like a Humvee, an unarmored Humvee, so the money could be sucked back to the Pentagon. That was in the earliest stages of the war when they were sending the boys out without an armor. You know, you didn't want to give them armor. They were cannon fodder. So they put them out there without sufficient armor. So an RPG goes right through the Humvee, right into the, and he's the gunner, and it hits him in the pelvis and winds up sticking in his body unexploded. So and he was a Latino kid, by the way. Now they wheel him into the operating room. I'm watching it. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And they show an x-ray of it. The damn thing's in the guy's body, in his guts. So the surgeon, the Korean-American surgeon, he says, I was told not to do it. And I said, no, I took an oath. I want to do this. I want to save this boy's life. And the surgeon himself couldn't have been more than 35. Clean-faced, intelligent eyes, my God. So he sends virtually everyone else out of the operating room. And he does the initial work. And this kid's laying there with this ticking bomb in his body. Then they have to bring in a guy who's a bomb expert, a demolition expert. And he now is in there alone, and he's telling everyone get out of the room because he figures the most he'll lose is his hands. You hear this at this point? Because he's wearing some, like, bomb-proof thing on his chest. Anyway, the long and short is they pull it out of the kid, and now he's got a lifetime of pain. Okay, his guts are shot. God knows if it. And they show him back home in Camp Pendleton with a wife and a baby, this nice Latino Marine who got shot like this. And I just shook my head. I said, I don't understand the heroes in this world. I just have no idea what pain is, number one. And number two, I don't know what tragedy is. And number three, I don't know what heroism is. And on that wonderful note, let's play the Stars and Stripes Forever. We'll take a break and I'll be right back. Go ahead.
And if he has to reinvent himself, if he has to be a little less conservative, I think he will, as long as he can retain that audience.
That's the simpering reporter Stettler of the New York Times, who misquoted the actualities of the radio business today. I corrected him by sending this to his secretary, the relative position of various hosts in America. But they're jealous. I mean, the fact is that these little men of the New York Times will probably, and the Vanity Fair will be out of business shortly, planning the revolution somewhere. And they're jealous of Rush, and they're jealous of everybody in the radio business. Irrespective of what the numbers are, they are large. They're gargantuan, especially when you consider the newspaper business is contracting, and these guys will probably be fired soon. So don't make any mistake about it. I mean, this is still the king of all media areas. For some reason, talk radio is, and I told you the reasons yesterday. It is the only channel for Republican talk and conservative talk on a regular basis. I do conservative talk. The golfer and Wallbanger do Republican talk. And there's no question Republican talk sells better than conservative talk because that's the establishment. That's how it works. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com, website. Callers abound on this pre-July 4th program in New York City on WOR. Howard, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Michael, that last piece of radio on the soldier that took the RPG was incredibly moving. I mean, that's heroism right there in a nutshell, and I could tell that you were moved by it. It was just very powerful.
Well, my family has given money to special forces groups, and I don't want to go into it. But I didn't know how to send money to the family. See, I would like to give money directly to the family, not to a group. I had for a minute wished they would put up a number for that guy, the Latino guy who took the RPG. I'd like to send him money for his child. You know what I'm saying? That's what I like to do. I'd like to just send him a check. That's what I would like to have done. I don't know how to reach him.
Absolutely. No,
that's.
World.
I mean, this is where the money should be going, is not to the organizations necessarily. They're not bad, but I don't want any management money taken out of it. These guys have paid so much for this country that we all owe them. We all owe them, and they're doing our work, irrespective of whether or not you believe the Iraq war was good, bad, or different. It doesn't really matter what you believe. All that matters is that they're facing down Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and you're not doing it. I'm not doing it. They're doing it, not the newspaper writers.
Savage.
We'll be right back.
2008, T-ball on the South Lawn.
You hear this? Do you hear what's
I'm
going on?
I'm proud to be joined by the commissioner for the day, Roberto Clemente Jr. Bienvenido.
Gracias, gracias.
Sí. Roberto, I don't know if you noticed.
Well, that's enough already. I'm stupefied by this. The economy's collapsing. Everything, and he's playing T-ball. Here in San Francisco, by the way, the city fathers, shall I say the city metrosexuals, have put out an edict that all references to unauthorized fireworks be referred to as undocumented fireworks in order not to offend the illegal aliens. So anyone who is caught firing off undocumented fireworks will be, I guess, slapped on the wrist. I don't know what. No, they'll probably get life terms here in San Francisco. The gunshots, the thugs, the crack dealers, the muggings, the robbery will go on. But anyone who is using undocumented fireworks will get 5 years. Kamala Harris is making certain that the jails are ready for the people who are going to use the undocumented fireworks, while the undocumented aliens can continue to ply their trades in the streets of San Francisco. I think I'm going to take my camera around. You know, I have Savage's eye camera on michaelsavage.com, and I tend to take the nice pictures, you know, Chinatown, North Beach, this and that. But I think, what if I ran a video feed of what I actually see in the streets here? The garbage, the bums urinating in mailboxes, puking on themselves, the streets, how dirty they are. Why doesn't the city require the storekeepers to use like a hose every day? To wash, you know why? Because then they might wash the bums down into the gutter, and you don't want to upset an undocumented bum. You know, if you hose down a street, you're liable to wet a bum's pants, and you don't want to soil the urine stains with water. After all, that's his lifestyle. That's actually a form of his artwork. If you think about it, the urine stain on his pants is an expression of his creativity, which has been thwarted by an oppressive society. And so to wash away the urine stain with a hose is really racist and sexist and bummist. I never understood why they don't require a shopkeeper, just for the sake of their own business, to get, what do you call it, that they pressure wash every morning a street. Some businesses do up here in North Beach. Some of the nicer Italian restaurants, they get guys at the, every morning, clean, beautiful. And next door, you have to hold your nose as you walk by whatever. And we just don't understand how they go on and on and on. How could such a small minority of radical activists from so many, there's not many of them. I got to tell you right now, there's a very small number of them. How could they hold an entire city hostage? No one understands this. Their numbers are very tiny. Police could take them in and arrest them. Answer, the lawyers, the courts, the judges. And until there's a wholesale cleansing in the court systems in this city, and then in the nation, we'll never have a nation back. And that's why, you know, this city is a very important city to look at. If you want to see what Nancy Pelosi will bring to America, you don't have to look any further than San Francisco with the Honduran crack dealer story. After all, she could stop this. Don't blame the mayor for this. She's the federal official. Barbara Boxer could stop it. Dianne Feinstein could have stopped it. Where are they? Where are they? Where are these wonderful Democrats on this issue, the most important issue of our time? I'll take your calls on any other topic. I don't really want to talk about it. New Jersey, Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dave. This is the release of Samir Quintar coming up. I want to find out if you...
Whoa. Let me back up. Wait, who? What did you say? Please say it again.
The Israeli prisoners, they're going to swap them. With some miracles.
All right, let me just frame the story. Israel, the demoralized Israel under Olmert, the conspirator, is going to give back a convicted terrorist who broke open a four-year-old Jewish girl's head with a rock, smashed it in with a gun butt, who's been in jail for a number of years. They're giving him back to the terrorists in exchange for two dead bodies. Go ahead.
One thing that makes no sense. Why don't they just kill him now and give him back for dead bodies? How could they do it to his parents? I just watched his mother, the mother of the Dani Aran. She was talking and she couldn't believe.
The mother of the child whose head was smashed in by this terrorist, she's around giving, she's still around?
She just gave an interview now in the Israeli television.
She's, and what is she say? What is she saying, the mother of this child? She also smothered a 2-year-old to death by accident, hiding from this terrorist.
That was, we're talking about the grandmother of the baby, which is the mother of Danny. Danny was the father. Danny was, he killed him from zero, you know, from a close range. He killed the father first, then he smashed the daughter's head with his rifle.
Why is he still living? You know why he's still living and why this abomination can go on? Because there's no death penalty in your country.
Then that opens the door.
That's right, because the Israelis committed suicide a long time ago by embracing peace now. From Berkeley, California, one degenerate, sick, drugged-up rabbi brought the virus of liberalism to Israel. And this degenerate, sick rabbi from Berkeley, California, who brought peace now to Israel, infected the body politic to an extent that the country is almost incapable of defending itself right now.
Right. But what really bothers me is that in 2 weeks, when they're going to send him back, Samir Kuntar, they're going to have people dancing around him. For who?
Oh, yes. You're going to see the Hamas people celebrating, shooting guns in the air when the murderer goes home.
And even about Western, you know, the senor.
No, well, maybe Wolf Blitzer can interview him. Maybe Wolf Blitzer can send the Gulfstream to give him an interview in Geneva.
Yeah, this is the one.
No, wait a minute. I got it. Larry King could come out of a garlic stupor and fly to Geneva and interview him. So, what was it like to crush the baby's head, huh? Terrible thing, huh? So, what was it like to see the father dead from a few feet away, huh? Why not have Larry King do it? Larry King would be perfect for it. He would have been the type that would have led Jews into the gas chamber, little Jewish children to stay alive another 3 days, in my opinion. Now, you see why I'm loved by the major media, Dave? Do you see why I'm loved so much? Doesn't understand. You see, you understand why Michael Savage is beloved in America by the corporate clowns? Do you see why this program is so popular with the people and so feared by the corporate clowns, the pogo stickers? The pogo stickers. But that's the story. What do you want to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. So what am I having in my barbecue? What am I having? Everybody I heard wants hot dogs. That's all I heard they want. So you put out this and that. That's all anybody eats anyway. Because they do taste good once a year. You get the all beef. You grill them. I like those. I like the chicken apple sausages. I'm going to have corn. I make corn so good. It's so easy. It's unbelievable. They have to be in the green with the leaves. You only take off the corn silk, which, by the way, is a powerful diuretic. If you want to ever use a powerful diuretic, you talk about watermelon as a diuretic and a Viagra-like effect. They don't even know the half of what I know. They don't know a 20th of what I wrote books on. You take corn silk and you make a tea out of it. And let me tell you, Junior, you're not going to be kicked around like the 98-pound weakling after that. I can guarantee. You really want to be Superman. Eat watermelon rind and corn silk at the same time. Your wife better be out of town. That's all I can tell you. So you take the corn, you take off the corn silk, but you leave on the green leaves. You hear me? But they have to be around the – don't – a lot of the greengrocers cut the end off and expose the corn. Boom, finished, no good. You don't want the corn exposed. You want it wrapped the way nature made the corn, the way corn grew in nature. And so it's sealed like in its own little oven of green leaves. Now, you wet the leaves with water. They got to be not soaking, but wet. You put it on the grill, that's all. And what's the big deal? The Indians did this. And you rotate it so it doesn't burn, and you keep putting a little water on it. And the thing steams in its leaves, and boom, you pull it out. And if you love corn to begin with, which I love, I think corn contains lutein, which is – lutein is an amazing phytochemical. Do you know that lutein has a particular affinity for the eye? That this particular plant compound found in corn – is taken up at a more rapid pace by cells in the eye than any other organ in the body. So in other words, corn is good for vision. You didn't know that. Did you know, now I'm starting to get into the herbal thing, that blueberries and the English equivalent of the blueberry was eaten by British pilots in World War II prior to night missions because it improves night vision. They called it, I think, bilderberry or something to that effect. But it's the same as our blueberries, just a related species. I think it's Vaccinum, but I'm not exactly sure of the species. The point I'm making is that blueberries in a jam form without sugar, just the plain blueberry jam, there's some wonderful products in the market without sugar added, is amazing for your vision and for your eyes. There's so much out there. There's so much knowledge out there that's been lost. And all of my life, from the time I started writing, I've always tried to preserve the more ancient knowledge so that the current and future generations wouldn't, you know, would use it and still have it. And in many ways, here I am in radio and doing the same thing when you think about it. What is a true conservative? Does he hold on to everything old for the sake of holding on to everything old? Absolutely not. A wise conservative holds on to what is good and lets go of what is not good or is of no longer useful. That's what a true conservative does. So don't think that I'm this rigid, you know, one-dimensional or two-dimensional character. I'm a multidimensional conservative, and the fact of the matter is you have to analyze each and every thing that you're talking about to see whether it's worth conserving. I'll be right back. Savage. So as I say, if you're considering using fireworks in San Francisco that are illegal, the police will arrest you on two counts. One, for using undocumented fireworks. And two, if you use the word illegal in any context, it's another charge in San Francisco because it may be offensive to nine-tenths of the voters for the mayor and the supervisors, the undocumented crowd. That's the reason they're giving them ID cards, which is illegal, and the government should. The federal government has every right to stop in and prevent the city from giving out ID cards to illegal aliens. You cannot document people if you're a city. You can't do it. It's the same thing as making yourself a sanctuary city like you're bigger than the government itself. What is wrong with these people? What world do they live in? They think it's 1989 and they can still get away with it? The people are near revolt in this city and in this country. They're this far away from a revolution. From what's going on in this country from these out-of-touch politicians. Monterey, Christina, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Happy 4th.
Thank you.
Talk about today's San Francisco Chronicle article about Gavin Newsom's flip-flopping on his sanctuary in the city for immigration.
Yes.
I think it's disgusting. I think it's a classic liberal trying to pretend like he's a centrist because he wants to run for governor. And I wanted to get your thoughts.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. How can he have it both ways? He can't just say it was the court's problem. But to the mayor's credit, and you have to give credit where credit is due because no one is all bad and no one is all good. He did say it was indefensible, the program, and he's against it. But he's got to go a step further. He's got to turn the guy over in the juvenile department who did this to the federal authorities for prosecution, number one. And I'll get his name in a minute. And number two, he's got to say that the sanctuary city is a violation of the will of the people, and he's going to stop it in San Francisco, that he's going to bring before the Board of Supervisors that it's time to become legal again in this city, and we're going to outlaw the sanctuary city concept because it's out of touch with the people of today. Now, if he did that, he has a chance of winning the governorship, but he won't do that because he doesn't have good advisors. You hear what I'm saying?
I hear.
If he could change with the times and realize it's not 1989, that we're living in a new world and there's a new generation that doesn't want this kind of pandering to the illegal aliens to go on. And he said he's going to take that away. And if he said that the juvenile probation director, William Sifferman, is going to be turned over to federal authorities for full prosecution for shielding Honduran crack dealers, he has a chance to win. I do not think he is capable of doing that. The name is William Sifferman. I believe he has broken the law sufficient to be arrested on federal charges. I believe that Mr. Russinella, who is a first-class U.S. attorney, should arrest William Sifferman for violating federal statutes, maybe five of them, and William Sifferman should take the fall for what went on in this city. The city has spent $2.3 million just to house illegal immigrants in juvenile hall rather than turning them over to federal authorities since 2005, the year Newsom appointed William Sifferman. Okay, this is a man who flew these kids out of the city to avoid prosecution. This is a man, Sifferman, who allegedly not only flew them out, but made sure that they avoided federal prosecution. But these are not just illegal aliens that were here. These were kids who were arrested for dealing drugs. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Moreover, we don't even know how old these people are. They say they're children, but they may not be. They could be adults who look young. And so Sifferman has violated, in my opinion, or should be tried on, various federal charges. And I think Mr. Russinello should charge him and make an example out of this guy to put the fear of America into the hearts of this crazy city that people can't take it anymore. Sending juvenile crack dealers to an unlocked group home in San Bernardino to evade federal authorities, to me, is a federal offense. But the mayor, to his credit, came out on the right side of this thus far. He said, there's nothing good about all of this. I can't beat around the bush. This in the past was something dealt with in the juvenile justice system. It just didn't get up the chain. That's my fault. Ultimately, I'm accountable. Ignorance is no defense. He's 100% right. Give the mayor credit where credit is due. But he should go a step further. He should say, I'm now turning over my deputy Sifferman, who should have known what he was doing, and he should face the full penalty of the law if he's guilty. Moreover, I'm going a step further because I've come to understand that the idea of the sanctuary city has been abused, and it is costing the city too much socially, politically, criminally, and I am now going to move to eliminate the sanctuary city concept from San Francisco and let him take the political heat. I can guarantee you, if he did that, not only could he become governor, he could go all the way to the top of the chain. He won't do it because they have no one like me advising them. They live in a bubble. They only listen and think what they want to hear, and they don't understand what's really going on outside their own little world. And I represent, I think, a very significant part of the votership. Forget about the media. I don't represent the media. I represent the people more than I do the media. 1-800-449-825. If you're listening to the most original voice in radio, the Savage Nation, we have many topics to talk about. I would rather not talk about the illegal problem. I think it's the seminal problem of our time. And I hope to God that it's solved in your time. And I believe it is. I think there's been a slow revolution. I know. I can show you every example of it. Sheriffs, cops around the country are doing what the federal government will not do, refuses to do. And eventually this will snowball until this government starts doing what the people want done. What do you think when you say you want the people's business done? What do you think the number one item on the list? Yeah, they keep saying it's the economy. That's, again, the newspaper schmucks. They're telling you what you should think. Sure, there are economic problems, but they're all tied into illegal immigration, outsourcing of jobs, and the corporate criminals who've taken over the government, who have put their own pocketbooks and feathering their own nests and their corporate cronies ahead of the United States. And you could start way up the food chain on that one. You don't have to look too far to understand what I'm talking about. And you got to look at the companies they came from and see and ask yourself, how come the company that the secretary of X came from survived the recent Wall Street debacle and, in fact, thrived while their main competitor died? Let's start there and work your way down. Just start at the top of the food chain and the rest will fall into place. It's really not that hard to figure out what I'm talking about. But there's only so much risk I'm willing to take, and there's almost only so much damage I'm willing to bear. And there's only so much pain I'm willing to live with, and only so much paranoia I'm willing to survive in. And there's only so many moments in the day, and this is one of them. And tomorrow is hot dog day, and that's the end of the story. And the dermatologist and the rollover, and it's nothing. I don't know where the portal is, and I didn't see any entry point. And I don't know what to give you, but here's 3 prescriptions, and don't use them, but I have to write them, because if I don't, I could get sued in case you should drop dead from something worse. But if it flares up again, don't call, because it's July 4th, take the pills, shut up, don't call again. But I hope you don't need them, as I know you won't, because you know it's nothing that we really understand. It's a mystery illness, like all illnesses, to 99%. And so take the pills, fill it, make believe I wrote it, and you needed it, and you'll take it, and you won't take it. But I told you to take it even if you didn't need it. In case you didn't need it, you took it, and then I'm covered for medical and Medicare and won't get sued and have a nice life, and now you can put your pants on, and who are you voting for? This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation pre-July 4th show, you know, nothing particularly patriotic or vitriolic or whatever. We're just dealing with the news. We're shocked by some of the stories. We're bored by some of the stories. Fireworks tomorrow, as you know, in San Francisco, they're illegal anyway, but they've now passed a new law, allegedly, that if anyone refers to them as illegal fireworks, they will be arrested on two counts, one for using the word illegal in any context. You now have to refer to fireworks as undocumented fireworks. If you call the police and say there are undocumented fireworks, they will come and take care of the fireworks purveyors. However, if you say there are illegal fireworks being used in my neighborhood, you will be arrested for offending illegal aliens. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, many other stories that are shocking people around the world. Let's go to the callers in this time period. New York City, Sean, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Honor. Happy 4th of July to you, sir. I just wanted to express to you, I was walking through Manhattan today going to cash my paycheck, and I noticed a homeless man all disheveled and hunched over at a corner about a block ahead of me, and I considered giving him a dollar once my check was cashed. As I got closer to him, a nice family, a mother and two young daughters, was walking past him in the opposite direction than I was walking. Excuse me. And he started to taunt the young girls, the two young girls, saying, oh, I'd like to kidnap you. How would you like to come live with me and all this? So I was determined not to give him the money at that point. But when I had come out of the check cashing place, I certainly gave him a piece of my mind. And I had considered ripping a dollar right up in front of him. And as I got closer to him, I realized he was drinking a 40-ounce of Coors Light. And, you know, I called him a dirtbag.
Look, Sean, let me explain something. I was told by a doctor 15 years ago, don't get into it. Any kind of verbal altercation with homeless, they're tougher than you are because they live in the gutters. That's number one. Number two, most of them are infected. You get into a fight with them, you're going to wind up with hepatitis or worse. Number three, you're going to go to jail because they're seen as the victim when in fact they're the purveyors of, let us say, illegality in our cities. Again, they're a class of people who need treatment, and there's a 90-day cure for the homeless problem throughout America that I could fix in 90 days. First of all, a goodly percentage of the homeless population in America are criminals on the lam. They're hiding as homeless. So they would go to prison, obviously, once they're found out for who they are with either fingerprint or DNA evidence. There's another large segment of the homeless population that belongs in secured mental hospitals. That is where they were treated. This type of personality was treated in the past. There's a 10-20% of homeless are absolutely self-sufficient, and they do it for a number of reasons. One, because they like to harass the bourgeoisie. It's sort of a lifestyle with them. They make believe that they're homeless in order to say, I'd like to rape you. And they know the husband won't wallop them in the face because they're liable to get arrested for doing so, meaning the husband. So they use the homeless act to get over on people. All I can say to you is it's not your problem. It's your mayor's problem. Bloomberg did it to you, and Bloomberg could solve it. You have to ask yourself why this problem has gone on so long. There are so many solutions to this so-called homeless problem. The number one is to not let the left use the language. They stole the language by inventing the word homeless. These are not homeless people. They have been given shelters. They won't use them. So therefore, they're not theoretically homeless. There's something else, and that is there's other words for them, vagrants, bums. You can name it anything you want. But the reason they were called homeless was to create a sort of sense of victimhood upon this generation of parasites. Most of them live off the city. Here in San Francisco, the last I checked, approximately and at least $300 million a year, at least, is earmarked for the bums in the streets. $300 million, and yet you see the daughters of rich families taken out of the private schools, brought in here by buses, and to give them sandwiches. And they go up to the bums on the street and say, oh, hello, poor sir, would you like a turkey, a ham, a tuna, or a cheese, or a vegan sandwich? The guy looks at them like he knows they're crazy, and this is what they're doing with the young girls from these private schools who are well-meaning. It's the parents whose heads need to be examined, not the children. I don't blame the children. I blame the parents. Lexington, North Carolina. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Rich,
go ahead.
The thing that I wanted to compliment you on is that you showed us by example what Mr. Obama should have done with all these friends that he keeps hobnobbing around, and then for 20 years or forever, however. And he says, you know, he didn't know what was going on or whatever, but... The night you read about Pat Buchanan's book, and I know that you've had him on before, and you respected him, but you showed us what to do right away, because I believe, I don't want to misquote you, but I believe you said, well, I can't have him on anymore if he's going to write a book.
You're very astute. You're absolutely astute. I'm glad you heard it. In fact, I'm considering writing an article about Mr. Buchanan, and I believe he's become Hitler's apologist. Now, for years, I liked Pat. I had him on the show many times. I was criticized for having him on by conservatives who didn't like him, who warned me about him. And I said, don't be ridiculous. He's just a really great guy and very intelligent. But his last series of columns have become overtly pro-Third Reich. There's no other way to describe what he's been writing. He's almost come out and said that the American heroes of World War II were not the heroes. He's almost come out and saluted Hitler's Wehrmacht and said they're the victims. Have you been reading what this man's been writing?
Yes, I have. And, you know, what scares me more is that it seems as if the typical Americans are not scared of words like communism, socialism. They're not scared of it anymore. Auschwitz, you know?
No, they don't even know what the words mean. But what they don't understand is that not everybody who's a conservative is a conservative. Not everybody who's a conservative has a firewall between themselves and fascism. And that's what I warned people about when I began in this long, long haul 15 years ago. 15 years ago, when I first started my first job in radio, I told the program director that I am a conservative, but I have a firewall between myself and fascism. I don't think he truly understood what I was saying, but I have towed that line for 15 long years. I cannot say that about certain people I've seen. I don't know whether it's presenile dementia. I don't know what it is that's emerging in this man who is all – forget about it. He's a very brilliant man. But to come out and start saying Hitler never wanted to conquer the world, Hitler never threatened America, things that he is saying that are totally and absolutely untrue, and to basically say that we provoked Germany into war looks to me like he's become an apologist for Hitler. And that's why I said about a month ago I can no longer have this gentleman on my program. I do not hate him. I'm very disappointed in him. I've left friends before who were liberal 20 years ago. I will leave colleagues, as it were, or guests on my show, whatever you want to say. I will never have him on my show again. Good luck to him. I only hope he comes to his senses before it's too late. In about a minute, I'm going to have a wonderful interview for you that I did earlier on Obama and homosexual marriage. And you got to hear it because he's very clear on this. And if Obama thinks the American people don't know where he stands on a gay marriage, he's right. And that's because his friends in the media have thrown a dust in the eyes of the voters, so they don't know where he stands on almost anything. But I believe that the independents do know where he stands, and I certainly know that the millions of listeners I have on a daily basis will understand where Mr. Barack Hussein Obama – am I allowed to use his middle name? I think it's become popular now to use Hussein. A lot of people adopted it. That Barack Hussein Obama, where he stands on homosexual marriage, and you decide where you stand on it. That's all. Either you're with him or you're against him on that issue. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere on the Savage Nation. The homosexual marriage issue is a very hot topic. It frankly is one of the most important issues for the survival of our modern day civilization. Barack Hussein Obama has made some vague statements about homosexual marriage while sending his wife out to speak out in strong support of this camouflage. George Neumeyer is editor of Catholic World Report and press critic for California Political Review. And he's not only been following the story, he says it seems very familiar. George Neumeier, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there's a similarity between the many faces of Obama on homosexual marriage and John Kerry when he ran for president.
Yeah, I see a parallel between John Kerry's technical opposition to gay marriage while simultaneously sending his wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, out to tell an audience in San Francisco the exact opposite, basically, that the country was going to accept gay marriage at some point. She used the phrase, we'll get there. So at the very moment Kerry was telling the nation that he opposed gay marriage, his wife was out in San Francisco saying the exact opposite. Now Barack Obama and his wife Michelle are pulling the same sort of trick where Barack Obama is saying in debates, you know, that he doesn't endorse gay marriage. Meanwhile, his wife is appearing before gay rights groups and saying the exact opposite. She's telling them that she's applauding them for trying to enact gay marriage at the state level. And also, Barack Obama, incidentally, by the way, is he's sending out letters to gay rights groups like the Alice Toklas Club and applauding them for taking advantage of California judges, the Supreme Court's decision to allow them to get married. So his position is incredibly contradictory and convoluted, and this is sort of a replay of the sort of game that John Kerry and Teresa Hines were playing in 2004.
If it didn't work for Kerry then, why do they think it will work with Obama now? What are they thinking?
Well, I mean, I guess he basically underestimates the intelligence of the American people. He thinks that he can perform a con job here and speak out of both sides of his mouth on this issue. I guess he thinks that he's a little bit more adept at rhetoric than John Kerry. John Kerry is somewhat clumsy in his approach on this issue, but Obama feels like he can probably manipulate the issue more effortlessly than John Kerry did.
Well, it's not covered in the mainstream media because they're part and parcel of the conspiracy, right?
They agree. I think they're assisting Obama in pulling the wool over the eyes of the American people. They're willing to play along with Obama's charade, where he pretends like he's against gay marriage, but in fact he's for it, and he's sending out people to take the opposite view, to in effect tell the gay rights community, just hang in there, let the political charade play out, and you'll get gay marriage in a few years.
So isn't this Obama pandering to try and win over some conservative voters?
Yeah, he obviously needs to kind of dupe church-going Americans into voting for him, because that's one thing which John Kerry couldn't do. He lost to George Bush in 2004 because 61% of church-going Americans voted for George Bush. So after that happened, the Democratic Party decided that they had to tone down their loud secularism and that they had to disguise their secularism in religious language. And so Barack Obama is the ideal candidate for the Democratic Party because he presents secularism in a religious guise, and all of his efforts to, you know, reach out to the religious by saying that he's going to build up George Bush's faith-based charities is part of this con job, this project to steal religious values, so-called values voters, away from the Republicans.
But Obama getting the presidency will make it actually harder for the faith-based organizations.
Right. I mean, this is, you know, faith-based charities shouldn't fall for this trick, because once he's in office, he will use his power to make sure that these faith-based charities don't do anything that's actually based on faith. And he will use federal regulations to prevent them from operating according to their moral and religious precepts, which is what he basically said in Ohio this week. He said that while he was going to expand the faith-based charity program, he was also going to expect that these charities not discriminate against homosexuals, for example. So, in other words, there are going to be a lot of strings attached to receiving money from an Obama administration. He's going to force these faith-based charities to sing secularist tunes for their supper.
He's playing both sides in this. Do you honestly think it will work? Aren't people onto the flip-flopping?
Unfortunately, because John McCain is so weak on these issues, and because John McCain's not making much of an effort to batten down the values vote, it's possible that Obama could deceive religious voters into supporting him. All this week, he's been conducting what he's called Values Week, and he's been trying to present himself as a new kind of Democrat who's friendly to religion. But the reality is that all of this religious rhetoric is designed not to purify the party's extreme secularism, but to advance it. So he's working that side of the street. Meanwhile, his wife is working the other side of the street and speaking to gay rights galas in New York City and telling them, just hang in there, you're going to get gay marriage soon.
What does McCain need to do to bring in the faith-based vote?
Well, he needs to take their issues seriously. He needs to engage the cultural and moral issues that concern the American people. He has an enormous opening on this issue because the American people don't want national gay marriage, but that's what they're going to get with Obama. So if McCain actually exerts himself on this issue and points out that Obama is opposing the people of California's drive to ban gay marriage, and if he can present Obama as an elitist rather than a populist who's trying to deprive the American people of basic freedoms and deprive the American people of access to the founding values of the country, then he could actually get religious conservatives out to vote for him, you know, in big numbers, the same way George Bush did in 2004. George Bush won in 2004, as most observers agree, on the gay marriage issue. The American people did not want gay marriage under John Kerry. And so they got out in huge numbers and voted for George Bush. Bill Clinton even acknowledged that when he said that John Kerry had blown it by not taking his advice, supporting the anti-gay marriage constitutional amendments in the individual states, like in Ohio. John Kerry didn't take that advice from Bill Clinton. He said he didn't want to do that. That might appear homophobic. So he just sort of took a kind of vague, technically opposed position to gay marriage. He didn't go into the states and support the states in their opposition to gay marriage. And Bill Clinton said that was a big mistake.
But will McCain do what needs to be done?
He's so wobbly on these issues. He's still the same guy who called Jerry Falwell an agent of intolerance, unfortunately, in my view. So I'm not too optimistic about McCain's willingness to tackle these issues, even though there's an enormous opening for him to differentiate himself from Obama on a very crucial issue to the future of this country. If Obama is really opposed to gay marriage, why is he sending out letters to gay rights activists and applauding them for getting married, as he did in that letter to the Alice Toklas Club, if I'm pronouncing the name of that club properly? His position is just flatly contradictory. I think that if John McCain has any sense, he'll spend a lot of time exposing that and convincing the American people that an Obama presidency means national gay marriage.
George Neumeier, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Thank you for having me.
The one and only Savage Nation with the pre-July 4th. Now, that would be a regular broadcaster voice. I was reading about a woman, 60, the oldest woman in the U.S. to give birth was Frieda Birnbaum. Last year, New Jersey resident Frieda Birnbaum, 60, became the oldest woman in the U.S. to give birth. I could just imagine the difference between Frieda Birnbaum as a mother at 60 from Frieda Birnbaum when she was 20. At 20, she had a son. She probably would have said, eat, it's good for you, my son. But now at 60, Frieda would probably say, don't eat, it's not good for you, my son. Just a matter of time, things change. Houston, Texas, Max, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, God bless America and God bless Americans.
Thank you.
Now, we have a new axis of evil. I've just discovered it. It's Hillary, Obama, and Michelle. And they are the new axis of evil. We know what two of them are, but we don't know what Hillary's going to do.
Well, what do you mean by axis of evil? I don't like their Marxist politics, and I say that having studied Obama's past, his mentors, and his positions prior to his exposure, I understand all of that, you know, where the state tells you what's good for you. That's what I mean by Marxism. So what is it you're calling about primarily? What single topic is the one that's agitating you today?
One that's agitating me the most is you've got Obama saying no to gay marriage. You've got Michelle Obama saying yes to gay marriage. And you've got Hillary Clinton out there like a submarine hiding.
Well, let's talk about homosexual marriage for a minute. Why do you oppose it? Tell me why.
Why? Because it is not a union between a man and a woman. That's what marriage is.
All right. I want to explore this. How does that affect you as a heterosexual man who's married or not married or wants to be married? How does that affect your marriage? I've heard the other side say, how does my love affect you?
It dilutes the sanctity of marriage. If they're going to call it marriage, and marriage is the key word, not a union, but marriage, It just drives me crazy to even think that's even possible.
So you're saying it so confuses the word marriage, it so confuses the institution of marriage that it weakens the institution? Is that what you're saying?
It dilutes the institution of marriage. Marriage.
So, no, hold it. Let's talk about it. So what is the institution of marriage designed for?
The propagation of humankind.
Okay. Now, I'm not taking the opposition side. I'm just going down the scales with you. What about married couples who get married and cannot or do not want to have children?
If they cannot have children, there's always adoption. They can always go find children that need a loving family. If they do not want to have children, that is their right.
Well, look, I've been very strong on this issue, but I have a couple of questions for you. I live in a city where there are a lot of gay people and a lot of gay people with children, and I see them, and I'm not blind. I actually look, and I see what I see. Now, what if I see two men together, and they don't look particularly different than two heterosexual men, and they have a child, and they're kind to that child? What should I think?
I think it's an unbalanced raising of the child. The child needs a mother and a father. The problem with this country today is that there's too many one-parent children. We don't need that. We need balanced families. And because
I agree with you that it would be best if there was a mother and a father. But let's look at the children, though, about all these unwanted children in the world. Are they not better off with two loving men? And I'm asking this question because I'm really asking it. Is that child not better off with two loving men raising the child than what? No parents?
I would
forced,
believe
stayed home. Where would they be better off?
It would be better off in a normal, loving unit.
Well, we agree on that. I agree they would be. But what if there is no normal, loving home and the child doesn't have parents? The child's in a institution, the equivalent of a state-run institution, a foundling home, whatever you want to say. And these two guys say, I really want to raise this child. We have a loving home. We have money. We love it. What damage does it do to the child?
Dr. Savage, I've never been exposed to that, so I cannot answer that honestly. I can tell you what the state would do. The state would go in and take them as they stole those children out here in West Texas, but they're forced to return them by the law. By the court.
Yeah, well, I was 100% opposed to the stealing of the children from the FLDS. In fact, I think the judge should be put in jail for kidnapping and acting like a Nazi. I've said that. I hope they sue the people and win. That was one of the most impossible situations I've ever seen, taking children away from families like that in Texas. That was a travesty. Look, my arguments about gay marriage are a little along these lines, which is that marriage as an institution is already in enough trouble. Marriage as an institution needs to be supported, not diluted. Marriage does not need to be confused. It needs to be solidified. And I think that gay marriage weakens the institution of marriage for those reasons. But it doesn't mean you have to turn the people into devils or evil. See, that's where the dividing line again has to be drawn, Max. And again, looking at children, of course the ideal would be a loving home. A loving home with a mother and father. There aren't enough of them, Max. The country is falling apart socially. Children are being abandoned in droves. And so we have problems. Too many children, not enough loving parents. And, you know, the more I listen to the other side, the more I ask myself, what do I care what they actually do with each other? I never did. I never did. I've often said over and over again, I'm a sexual libertarian. I don't care what people do sexually. I don't care. I don't want the government in my bedroom. I don't want them in their bedroom. On the other hand, when it comes to marriage, I think that that's too far, and I think it is taking an already shaky institution and further weakening it. Let's put it to you that way. And that finally, Max, I think there's a huge difference between accepting a behavior in people and glorifying a behavior in people or encouraging a behavior in people, because the ultimate effect is upon our children. You cannot tell children that it is okay, as equally okay for them to go that way as it is for them to go the other way and to get married and have children. Not because they would be evil necessarily, but because they would be breaking the chain of evolution. Somebody has to explain to them that it doesn't make you evil necessarily, but you're breaking a beautiful chain that goes back millions of years, a chain that you are going to break, that you're logically going to break by this choice. Do people understand that they're breaking a chain of evolution? No one's ever said that to them. Why would they want to break the chain of evolution if someone explained to them that they're creating an evolutionary dead end? Has anyone told that to these people? I've talked about this so much that I don't really want to talk about it anymore. I think I've explained it for July 4th about liberation and my liberation theology, and that certain institutions should be left alone and be supported in so many different ways. The government should be supporting traditional marriage and is not. George Bush has failed us on this. George Bush, as I've said to you, has the power, so does the federal government, to support marriage. And I've told you my plan. I've given you a plan for oil. I've given you a plan for legal immigration. I've given you a plan for homelessness. I'll give you a plan to improve the institution of traditional marriage. And that is to give tax breaks to couples that are married, that if they stay together for 5 years, they get a reduction in their taxes of X percent. If they stay together for 10 years, they get a reduction in taxes of Y percent. They should be rewarded for marriage. They should be rewarded for staying together. The state has the power to reward behavior and to punish behavior, as it already does. In other words, if you commit certain crimes, you go to jail, you're being punished for behavior, right? Why should an institution as important as marriage, which is the brick of civilization, is marriage, for God's sakes. It's the brick of civilization. And it can be supported with tax benefits for married couples that stay together. 5 years, X percent off your taxes. 10 years, Y percent. 20 years, you should be given awards in this country if you stay together for 20 years. You should get an award in your town or your city. They should be invited to the White House instead of some moron playing ball with George Bush today. He should have couples that are celebrating their silver anniversary or their golden anniversary. You want to talk about family values? Celebrate them on the White House lawn. There are positive things that can be done for marriage that are not being done by this administration or any other administration. You never hear anybody talking about it because they don't have any original ideas. The reason governmental officials and corporate officials cannot think outside the box, which they're big about saying, oh, well, I'll think outside the box, is because they are the box. They created the box. They are the box. Guys like me think outside the box because I am outside the box. I've been outside the box all my life. So I can think outside the box. I can come up with original ideas, and they're all good. Trust me on that. The ideas I'm giving you are all good. There's nothing negative in what I've said to you. Nothing. If you actually analyze and break it down and look at it in words, and then look at the holes in the words, and look at the circles in the words, and look between the letters of what I just said, and look at the mysticism of what I've just created for you, that everything starts with an idea, that ultimately I'm a mister giving you ideas. You don't know me. Do I exist? Am I real? How do you know if I'm real? I know I'm real. At least I think I'm real. But really, to you, I'm just an idea. I'm an idea. You hear the voice. You hear the ideas. Oh, I love that guy. Oh, I hate that guy. I love that guy. He's a hero. He's a devil. Well, who is he? Well, he's the man you love or you hate. But is it the man or is it his ideas? So if it's only his ideas because you don't know the man, then it's the idea you hate or you love. That's interesting. So everything starts with an idea. Nazism started with an idea. It led to the extermination of millions of people. So some ideas can be very dangerous indeed. Be careful what you say. All things begin with ideas. And then when they're put into deeds, you can either have salvation or hell. And so now let's go to the political situation of today so we don't stay too esoteric. Obama stands for ideas. He's not just a man with big ears. He's not just a man who Reuters created with a halo. He's not just a creation of the media. He's a man. But what he is as a man doesn't matter to me. He's probably a decent man. But what are his ideas? It's his ideas that matter, not what man that matters. He's never been arrested. He's never gone to jail. He's never committed a crime. So he's not evil in that sense. He's not a lawbreaker. But what do his ideas stand for? That's what you have to ask yourself. Would it make you freer or would it make you more of a slave of the state? The answer is with Obama and the people around them, you would be more of a slave of the state. All of these SDS radicals believe in an authoritarian government that tells you what to think, what you can say, what you can't say. They are, quote unquote, the politically correct crowd of fascists. And make no mistake about it, if you look at the arc that begins with liberalism, the arc has a continuance. Liberalism goes to socialism, goes to fascism, communism. It's all on an arc, liberalism, socialism, communism. And now you have to ask yourself that if Obama is simply a liberal slash socialist, which is what he is, he's on that area of that chart or that graph. He's a liberal slash socialist. but he's hung around with, he's been mentored by, slash communist fascists who have very dangerous ideas. And they're shared by too many powerful people in the Democrat Party who say, for example, that I don't like Michael Savage's speech and I want to ban his speech. So I'm going to pass the Fairness Doctrine, which is fascistic to its core, unconstitutional. There's no question if I fought them, which I would do, right to the Supreme Court, I would win. You cannot ban free speech in this country. It's impossible. It would boomerang back upon them. But Nancy Pelosi is fundamentally a housewife who got very lucky and is put where she is, but she doesn't think things through. Barbara Boxer is fundamentally a big-mouth housewife from Brooklyn. The only smart one is Dianne Feinstein, who knows better than both of them that the Fairness Doctrine is unconstitutional, would never pass muster. But more than that, the liberals themselves would backfire, would turn on them if they try to push the Fairness Doctrine, because wise liberals understand that what goes around comes around. If you ban conservative speech today, tomorrow it's going to affect them when the conservatives take over the country, because everything works in cycles and the pendulum swings. So today it's Michael Savage, tomorrow it's them. So they come to understand that the First Amendment has real meaning, and it means everybody has freedom of speech, including the people they hate. In fact, more particularly the people whose speech they hate. And as I've written before and spoken before in my great freedom of speech speech, which is the greatest speech on freedom of speech given since Thomas Paine, Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death. And it was the Talkers Magazine Award of 1997. It was put on DVD. It was banned by C-SPAN because that guy's a little martinet. The fact of the matter is that speech said that the First Amendment was written specifically to protect not polite speech, because polite speech doesn't need protection. It was written to protect impolite speech, violent speech, revolutionary speech. That is exactly what freedom of speech means. It means the speech that you hate to listen to. Do you understand that? That's what the First Amendment was written for. There are many things I hear in this country that I detest, but you can't ban them. I hear people talking against the military. I get angry. I hear them talking against soldiers, I get angry. I hear them talking against the flag, I get really mad. But you can't ban them because they're entitled to the First Amendment, as am I. Now, Nancy Pelosi doesn't know that, and she should know that. The Democrats who want to pass this are not Democrats. They're not at all liberal. They are fascists. I'll be right back. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I remember the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard a liberal say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is, they're threats to national security. That was stated on the congressional floor by Congressman Hinchey. He says, I'm a threat to national security, and he's trying to pass the so-called Fairness Doctrine to close down freedom of speech. Is that liberalism? Liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, Michael Savage, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. That's what this country has been about from the day it was founded. That's the trail of tears and the trail of blood that led to the freedoms that we enjoy in this country today. And we cannot permit a few small-minded martinets who don't even know that they're inhabiting the souls of dictatorships in Congress right now to deny us our freedom of speech. Where are the true good liberals? Okay, let's pause right there. That piece came from my great Freedom of Speech Award, which is probably the best and most important speech given on freedom of speech in a long time in this country. I don't know of a better one, or I wouldn't have written it. In fact, if I knew of a better speech, I wouldn't have given this one. A good speech on freedom of speech hasn't been written in so long. I wrote it, I presented it, and I made a DVD of it. I'm not selling you anything, but that's what it's from. And so if the day comes that Nancy Pelosi tries to introduce a bill to kill free speech in this country, I am going to get a Republican congressman or senator who's in favor of freedom of speech, and there are quite a few, to invite me to Congress, and I will give this speech on the floor of Congress, and I will remind Nancy Pelosi that this is not Mussolini's Italy. This is the United States of America, and she ought to be ashamed of herself. And this is the sad truth of the days that we live in. that people who pose as liberals, who cavort as Democrats, do not even understand that they're no longer in the image of the people they are imitating. They are nowhere near the FDR, the JFK, that they think they are. They are more in the image of the people that FDR and JFK fought than they are in the image of those people themselves. That's the sad truth about the Democrat Party, is that they don't even understand who they have become. But we the people do. And that's why I go back to what I said at the beginning of the show, this July 4th show, really, is that this country is in the midst of a slow conservative revolution. It's happening from the grassroots up. It does not matter that the newspapers don't recognize it. They're going to be gone like the dodo. They're the buggy whip of the communications industry. They don't even understand what's going on in this country. They can't. How can they? They laugh at men like me, as educated as I am. They dismiss the four bestsellers, the 22 books that preceded it, to their detriment. They're going to be sitting in a cafe planning the revolution, not me. With God's will and your listenership, I'll be right here on the Savage Nation for a good many years to come. The point I'm making is the success of an iconoclast guy like me, an iconoclastic man like me, indicates this revolution has not only begun, it's way past its infancy. It's way past its childhood. And when it hits its adolescence, look out, liberals. Look out. Please, everybody stand and put your hand on your heart. Do it for yourself, not for me. I'm not going to say another word. The flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave? The land of the free. If you were stirred by this, you're an American. If you laughed at it, go to nowhere.
Savage.